is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, on this Thursday, it's, so I was just watching the video. I just posted it on the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page for you to see. Strong stomachs only. Python in Indonesia ate a full-grown man. I don't know. I got fascinated by it there for a moment. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before in my life, and I've seen a lot of things. A full-grown man swallowed whole by a snake. That ought to turn some of you on. Roger Daltrey of The Who. Before we get to some other things here, I'm going to cover a couple of quick stories here. But the Roger Daltrey of The Who, 73 years old, saying things like We won't get fooled again. Says that a dead dog could have beaten Hillary Clinton in the recent election. Roger Daltrey supporting the Brexit exit that began yesterday. Returning to full sovereignty is the British nation. Leaving the EU is probably good when it was a trade union, but when it became a political organization, he went the wrong way. Anyhow, he says Hillary Clinton could have been beaten by a dead dog. So says Roger Daltrey of The Who. The Census Bureau's 2020 survey will not ask respondents' sexual orientation or gender identity. Dashing LGBT rights groups hopes that the new questions would be added and raising concerns that the Trump administration may have squelched the proposal. In a message that went to Congress a couple of days ago, the Census Bureau laid out the topics it plans to cover in the 2020 census, when every American household will be asked to provide data about residents' gender, race, ethnicity, and other topics. By law, the Census Bureau must inform Congress 3 years ahead of time about the survey and the topics it plans to cover. An initial draft published Tuesday of this week showed the agency planned to ask respondents about their sexual orientation and gender identity among the 51 other categories of questions, but a final version published in the afternoon did not include that question. It has been taken out. And I'm sure those on the left will be up in arms about that. Now, the Senate Intelligence Committee, you may have seen this yesterday, two senators came out, Chairman Burr, and Senator Warner of Virginia came out, Republican and Democrat respectively, to discuss the fact that they are now going to be looking into any potential connections between the Trump campaign or transition team and Russia, although to date, there's been no evidence of such. There's no evidence of such, but Chairman Burr said that they will look into it, but they are within weeks of completing an initial review. So this has been ongoing for a while. Within weeks of completing an initial review, committee staff are being given access to unprecedented numbers of documents, apparently. They had a joint press get-together, did Mark Warner and Richard Burr. Seemed pretty amiable overall. Of course, Warner throwing a few darts in there, as the Democrats do. The probe, unlike its House counterpart, has taken place largely behind closed doors. When pressed on that, reporter said, "Well, why are you doing? Why are you hiding behind closed doors?" Because, well, until there's something worth hearing out in public, we're not just going to drag these people through the mud. Basically, is what I got out of it. Lawmakers making requests to at least 20 individuals to be interviewed by the committee, five of which have already been scheduled. And Burr said the next 15 should be scheduled in the next handful of days, 10 days or so. Only Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, has been publicly identified, and the committee will interview him only when we know the scope of what needs to be asked. Burr in no hurry to get to this. Both Burr and Warner sought to distance the committee's work from the partisan feud in the House Intelligence Committee's concurrent investigation. Obviously, there's a lot of drama, said Warner, but argued that the committee has not lost sight of the central concern of the probe, an outside attempt to hijack the U.S. democratic process. Burr said they're not asking the House to play any role in their investigation and not asking to be involved in any way, either way. In fact, both quickly declined to answer any questions as it related to as it relates to the House investigation. And as the conspiracy theorists go, you know, the right used to be accused of wearing the tinfoil hats. Now, this investigation apparently has gone on for 8-9 months. To the best of my knowledge, there is no evidence whatsoever that this president, his administration, his campaign had any illegal, unlawful, inappropriate contact with the Russians. At least we've been shown no proof of that to date. Yet there are those out there that just refuse to let this sort of conversation go. In fact, you've got Maxine Waters out there demanding that Donald Trump be impeached immediately. For what crimes, we're not sure. On social media, I regularly see things that this is the most corrupt administration in American history. You guys should do some reading. Clearly, you don't know what you're talking about. And then there's this. Douglas Brinkley. He's made comment. He's apparently some sort of a presidential historian, Doug Brinkley. And he's been throwing around the word treason when it comes to president. Treason. Treason. Interesting choice of words. Anyhow, he talked about it with MSNBC here yesterday. Brinkley talking about this treason with MSNBC yesterday. I'd like you to hear it as well. Here he is. It's Doug Brinkley talking about his comments regarding Donald Trump, the president, and treason.
You told the Washington Post last week that, quote, there's a smell of treason in the air when it comes to this investigation. Why did you say that? And has anything changed about your view in the last week?
Well, you know, a lot of people are afraid to use the T word, treason, but in the end, that's what people are investigating. People talk about collusion with Russia. We're talking about whether there are people that worked in the Trump campaign who meddled in American elections, and our free and fair elections are the heart and soul of our democracy. And the very fact that on the day that I said that, FBI Director Comey is saying that the President of the United States is under a federal criminal investigation, it was stunning news. It remains stunning news. And we don't want to try to act like that's the new normal. If there's ever any evidence that any American citizens are working to undermine the U.S. government or undermine our electoral system, it's a serious cause. And what that is you're not working against America, and you're working for somebody who's an adversary of ours like Russia. That's treason.
Isn't it interesting to note that when Hillary Clinton was being investigated time and again, they just said, well, they're just looking at her emails and it's no big deal. Well, let me point out to you and be perfectly clear that an FBI investigation is always a criminal investigation. The same was true with Hillary Clinton. And of course, the same is true in what the FBI is. They're looking for crimes committed, but they've been doing it for months and months without suggesting, at least publicly, and James Comey would love to, it seems, without suggesting publicly that any crime has been committed thus far. We'll keep an eye on it for you. The phone calls can come now. 888-900-9966. I'll be right back.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, it's Thursday here on the Steve Gerber Show. Glad to have you here for the conversation. Last week at this time, we were expecting a vote on the American Health Care Act. It was postponed Thursday and then dropped altogether Friday. A big setback for House Republican leadership under Paul Ryan. The president seems to have absorbed it quite well because it never got voted on, so it wasn't really a loss, more or less a tie, I suppose. But our next guest here to talk more about it, Congressman Jack Bergman, General Jack Bergman of Michigan's 1st Congressional District, includes UP, much of the upper lower peninsula. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Great to be with you.
And how are you feeling today?
Well, you know, yesterday was our 19th anniversary, and I'm feeling pretty good this morning because my wife and I had a chance to celebrate with friends.
Well, there you go. And And how are you fitting into Washington? You're a newcomer to Washington. You're a retired U.S. Marine. You know, you knew you were going to have to roll up your sleeves to make some things happen. But how is the atmosphere so far? How are you fitting in?
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, fitting in, it's more about digging in and getting involved, building relationships, meeting the people. I don't care whether it's fellow colleagues on both sides of the aisle, whether it's staffers. Basically, it's kind of like, in some ways, going back to school and learning a lot about different subjects, budget, healthcare, tax reform, whatever the situation, you know, whatever the subject is. I probably spend 4 or 5 hours a day studying and a lot of time talking with folks and getting an understanding and basically working to get some things done.
So a lot of reading to be done. All right, so you were one of the folks here that was counted to be a supporter of the American Health Care Act that did not make it to a final vote. You supported that measure, and you say you're still fighting to fix the health care problems in America. Are you disappointed that it didn't go through? First of all, why did you support? A lot of people, Freedom Caucus and so forth, lined up opposed to that bill. Why did you support it to begin with?
Well, I think, number one, we have to be very careful that in any case, we, well, whoever the we is, don't let the perfection be the enemy of good. And this bill was good. Is anything perfect? Absolutely not. But a lot of times what people don't understand, when this bill passes, and a bill will pass here in the near future, it's going to go to the Senate. It's going to get tweaked. We're going to get it back. It's going to get tweaked some more. That's how the process works. But look at it this way. We're a few days away from the opening of baseball season. Hey, everybody gets 3 strikes. We just, last week was, was strike one.
Well, there you go. What about Mo Brooks' idea from Alabama? One of your colleagues there, you may or may not have met the man at this point, but he provided a one-sentence repeal of Obamacare and put it forth. Well, why wouldn't the Congress just vote on that?
Well, you know, you're familiar with the reconciliation process?
Well, you know, we're all trying to get familiar with it, but not the way you are, I'm quite sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's really simple. And there were the reconciliation process was put into play a number of years ago to allow Congress to actually get some things done without having to have the 60 votes in the Senate. And reconciliation process, all you need is 51 votes. So in trying to work through utilize, whether it be the budget, whether it be health care, whatever it happens to be, to utilize the reconciliation process, which he is 51 votes in the Senate, there are rules that you have to abide by that were set up. So a one-sentence repeal is really not going to fit what we need to put into the reconciliation process. So, and it's, I tell you what, I'm not necessarily sure I fully understand it, but I understand it enough to know that it is the best way for us to get the legislation passed to make sure that what's left of Obamacare, as it continues to implode, gets taken out and we move forward with a plan, not just stop and say, okay, we're done with this. Well, now what?
All right, let me, next topic now. The ongoing investigations by the House into alleged ties between the Donald Trump campaign, his transition team, and Russia, which to date I've seen no actual evidence, but they continue to dig, and there's, you know, some conversations that went on back and forth involving ambassadors and so forth, which doesn't seem too nefarious to me. But what do you make of it? You're a former Marine. You were sworn to defend this country for a career. What about Chairman Nunes, and what about this investigation, and what do you make of it?
Well, I hope I don't disappoint you, Steve, but because of my time spent, and I'm a member of the Budget Committee, and we're extremely busy right now, and also with Veterans Affairs and some of the hearings and we've got going on, and even with the Natural Resources, which is my third committee, because I'm not involved in the Select Intelligence Committee or Foreign Affairs, I really... You know, for me to comment on that right now, I have not studied it. All I know for the fact is that the world in which we live, there are going to be interactions across countries, that even if you would talk to someone like General Mattis, now the Secretary of Defense, he would probably be the first one to tell you that if you can, before the lead starts to fly, you sit down with potential adversaries and figure out ways to work together.
And try to fix it ahead of time. Yeah, okay. So I want to get one more question in. I get your point. It's not your focus of your attention right now. Last question. We only got about 40 seconds here. But I know you are going to bat because of some cutbacks from the EPA as it affects the Great Lakes and some of the projects that we have here. You've been strong on this, on trying to support the money coming to Michigan and the Great Lakes. I've got about 30 seconds, but I'll give you the last word.
Last word is very simple. The Great Lakes are the lifeblood of our area, and whether it's the Sioux Locks, whether it's the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, whatever it happens to be, we have to protect the Great Lakes. I, as well as many others, are working to make that happen, and it will be in the budget.
And it'll be taken care of. All right. Congressman Bergman, always a pleasure. I'd like to speak to you as often as we can, my friend. I know it's a lot of work, and we appreciate your input. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day, everybody.
Congressman Jack Bergman, General Jack Bergman, here on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Waking up and Dr. B, step across the line. 33 after on this Thursday. Quickly to Frank in DeWitt checking in. Frank, what's on your mind?
Yes, Steve. There were three dramatic things wrong with what that congressman had to say. First, he said that was a good bill. It was a horrible bill, because it didn't get costs down, and that is the vital thing for the people of this country, and it would have been a political disaster for the Republican Party.
All right, two and three.
Yep. Second, the mealy-mouthed excuse he gave you about reconciliation process being, you know, as an excuse not to repeal Obamacare.
I keep hearing that.
The Democrats used the nuclear option to get it through. That's what we can use to get it out.
And finally?
The third one, saying that we can work with the Democrats. You cannot work with the Democrat Party. This is not the Democrat Party of Jack Kennedy. These people, if you want to talk about traitors, they are traitors. The Democrat Party.
All right, we'll leave it right there, Frank, because I got to run. You got your points, and I greatly appreciate that. A lot more conversation on that. We'll have the lines back open here next hour to further any of these conversations, but I want to get quickly to our next guest because of something that has just happened with the president, Donald Trump, rolling back the Clean Power Plan by the EPA and a lot of other rollbacks going on. And I wanted to know how that would affect Michigan and specifically Consumers Energy and their counterparts at DTE potentially. So I have Brandon J. Hoffmeister here, Vice President of Governmental and Public Affairs for Consumers Energy. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks to be with you.
All right. So the Clean Power Plan rolled back. Consumers, you guys are in the process of shuttering several coal-fired power plants. You've already closed several around the state, and more were on the list to be closed by 2020. Is that correct?
Well, we didn't have anything on the list by 2020. You know, DTE and others, our sister utility, made some announcements in the early 2020s that they were going to be retiring some plants. So we retired 7 units last year.
All right, and you have no further units to go offline at this time. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, none in the plans, no.
All right, so does this rollback of the EPA help you to maintain existing power plants? Does it change your approach? What does it mean to your utility, to Michigan customers, frankly, going forward?
Yeah, it could, although to be honest with you, it's not exactly clear. Basically, what the executive order did is it said the EPA is going to put the brakes on what President Obama had done with respect to regulating greenhouse gas emissions from the electric sector, but it hasn't yet said what's going to replace that. There was a Supreme Court ruling a few years back that said that the EPA has to do something to regulate these emissions, didn't really say what. And so now it's kind of back to the drawing board under the Trump EPA to figure out what they're going to do. And whatever they end up doing, it's likely to also end up in the courts, as most of these big federal environmental rules do.
Like everything does these days.
It's uncertainty and delay a little bit for a while, which does open up some flexibility for us. you know, but it's not exactly clear. As with many things coming out of Washington, it's, you know, fits and starts, and we don't really necessarily have a comprehensive plan yet.
Right, and it's not just this administration. It's always coming out of Washington, fits and starts, good way to put that. How many coal-fired power plants are still in your network?
We still have five large coal-fired power plants. They power about a quarter of our fleet. So we've already been moving. With the retirement of those seven last year, we've made a major move towards more natural gas-fired generation in particular. You know, with the revolution we've had in America with hydraulic fracturing and natural gas supply, natural gas is actually putting a lot of pressure on coal economically. It's very cost-effective to power to power people's home with natural gas-fired generation. So we expect that trend to continue. You know, like anything, you want to have a balanced portfolio like you do with your retirement portfolio, and we expect we'll continue to do that going forward as well.
And with that natural gas, when you talk about it here in Michigan, just out of curiosity, Brandon, does that natural gas originate here in Michigan and therefore power Michigan? Does it come out of the ground here and stay here?
A little bit, although most of the natural gas that we've had with this boom in hydraulic fracturing comes actually from Pennsylvania, Ohio area. There's a lot of natural gas that's coming up that way that's feeding Michigan through natural gas pipelines.
And the pricing seems to be pretty steady, pretty even keeled. I mean, the price is pretty safe. And the reason I bring this up is we've had a guest on the program here recently a couple of times, talking about what has happened in Ontario. When they closed all of their coal-fired power plants, they didn't really have a backup plan. Some people have seen their electric rates go up 350%, and I think that would pretty much make a lot of Michigan residents just flat out pass out if they saw a 350% increase in their electric bill. So I'm trying to make sure we're not going to see things like that.
So we definitely, you know, want to continue to have a balanced plan going forward. You know, natural gas, as I said, has been the prices historically before we had this kind of technological revolution with fracking. Natural gas prices tended to be very volatile. Since that time, they've been very low and very steady. And, you know, barring, again, something happening in Washington, which we don't expect under President Trump, or something happen somewhere else on the regulatory front, we expect natural gas prices are going to be low for a long time. And we're still maintaining a significant percentage of our coal fleet. We built the seven plants that we retired were pretty old. We built them in the 1950s. They were reaching the end of their useful life. And to put on the environmental controls that we would have needed to comply with other environmental rules, not the Clean Power Plan, but some of the other Obama administration rules, just didn't make sense for our customers. It would have cost more to do that than to switch to natural gas and other resources.
So they were older and smaller plants as far as
correct
generation
correct
capabilities.
So our newer and larger plants, we've invested in world-class environmental controls to comply with those Obama administration rules.
So where are some of these new plants, and what are your plans about creating new natural gas plants? Any plans in the future to build new ones? And if so, where are they being built, and how many, and what's the future for consumers' energy?
So what we've been doing, rather than buying a new plant, we've been kind of scooping up deals on used plants. It's like buying a new car versus a used car. So
there
we
is such a thing.
Plant in Jackson, Michigan. We're about to have an RFP. We believe there's some existing plants around Michigan that might be willing to sell themselves to us as well. So we're going to go out for a competitive bid here in the next little while where we ask people to make offers to sell us a plant. And so that, I think, is our strategy and our plan going forward is we want to do this as affordably as possible. So if we can get a plant for 30 cents on the dollar than it would cost to build a new one, that's our plan A.
That's a pretty good plan A. Brandon Hoffmeister here from Consumers Energy. I didn't know there were such things available. Just go out and buy a used power plant and retrofit it for natural gas. Is that the plan?
Well, they're actually they are natural gas plants already. So there were a few power plants that are still existing that aren't either owned by DTE or by Consumers Energy, and so we're looking at those first because it's the right thing to do for our customers.
That's interesting. I learn things here, Brandon. That's the point of the program. I get to learn things right along with everybody else.
Happy to help.
Well, that's good because what people are concerned about, and I get utilities from both of the big companies for different things, and I get some natural gas from consumers, so it's important that the prices remain level. But those electric prices, you know, what happened in Ontario is frightening to a lot of people, but apparently pretty consistent, pretty steady future in front of us from what you're telling me. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, I think that's right. The other thing I want to highlight is I really want to thank the Michigan legislature for passing a comprehensive energy policy last year. Republicans and Democrats, frankly, working together to pass a complicated piece of legislation that ensures that we have enough power to replace these retiring power plants, and we do so in the most affordable way for Michigan and for the customers. So, you know, regardless of what's going on in D.C., the kind of fits and starts, we actually have a really good energy plan here in Michigan. And so an example of good government, which we don't see enough of these days.
Brandon Hoffmeister, great conversation. Thank you from Consumers Energy.
Thank you.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Hey, by the way, a couple of things for you. I try to pack as much in as I can. Jeff Bezos, the guy that owns Amazon, he also owns the Washington Post, despises Donald Trump, by the way. He has already this year, has Jeff Bezos, added more than $10 billion to his personal net worth. I've had a pretty good year, added $10.2 billion to my net worth. Warren Buffett at the same time fell $4.7 billion from his peak during the Trump rally. Bezos has passed Amancio Ortega and Buffett to become the world's second wealthiest dude. 53 years old, Bezos has a net worth estimated at $76 billion. $76 billion. You know, I should have invented something to send people products at no cost. Anyhow, Congressman Tim Walberg with me now to talk more about the things we started with Congressman Bergman here a little bit ago. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back with you.
You guys aren't doing much in Washington these days. Seem kind of bored. Nothing going on, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, we wish we could get to a few more things and keep moving forward. We've got the tax reform that's in the works. We've got the immigration reform. We've got the whole budget and appropriations process. But right now we're really centered on getting out of the locker room after halftime and going back and passing repeal and replace.
Well, tell me about that, because, you know, a lot of folks, I know you supported the American Health Care Act. A lot of people do, not a lot of Republicans don't. A lot of listeners to this program not pleased with that bill, say it does not address cost, is one of the things I keep a common theme, if you will. It does not address cost. It's not a full repeal. Well, Rand Paul called it Obamacare light. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but as you know, there are some hostilities out there. I'm sure you've gotten some calls to your office line. Where do we go from here, Congressman?
I think we go right back and do what we said we would do. And again, probably a lot of the rancor about this misunderstanding is the fact that people still don't get, because it's complicated, even complicated for members of Congress to understand, that this is a three-step process we're doing. We're trying to do it the best way so we can throw out as much as we possibly can and get on with the show. It starts with reconciliation. We can only put certain things in a reconciliation bill. It is a very unique thing, but it's done so we don't have to worry about a filibuster in the Senate. Rand Paul and others can say certain things, but unless they can get the 60 votes, then they better be supporting this effort. The second thing we need to know about this is this is only the first vote. The Senate will have an opportunity to fix it and make it better if they feel that that's the case. Then it comes back to us. There's another vote that will be taken, at the very least, in conference. But then there's that whole glut of things that Tom Price can do, 1,400 separate instances in the Affordable Care Act where he is given the opportunity.
But how do we get to, and I focus on that first word, affordable, because you're looking, I just spoke to a gentleman, friend of mine, lives in North Carolina. He just got his rate increases. He has about 25 employees. The average across the board increased 48% from Aetna,
yeah,
is what he got. 48%, and he pays a certain portion of that for his 25 employees. And he said he used to pick up, you know, all of the increase, and they always paid 35%, and he paid the rest. He goes, I can't do that anymore. It's getting closer to 50-50 because, he goes, I can't absorb that kind of increase for 25 people.
Well, I'm told that the average increase of rates now, if Obamacare stays in place, average rate of increase is over 25%.
Every year. All right.
So. Yeah, and so bottom line, it is broken. We've got to fix it. So that's why we're going to keep on. So the three steps.
All right, so the Freedom Caucus.
What the secretary can do, and then the policy bill that fixes all the rest that's left over after we do the first two steps. And we're even starting to do that now with my association health plan bill that was passed in the House last week and sent to the Senate. So this is a process, and frankly, we have to get it done. So that's where we're at now. I'm heading down from here. That's why we're talking earlier this morning.
I understand.
The Energy and Commerce Committee is meeting and talking about the next steps.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you get your colleague like Justin Amash and his cohorts in the Freedom Caucus? Because it depends on who you talk to. Some people think the Freedom Caucus is created this problem and created this block. Others say the Freedom Caucus saved America by getting rid of this bill. But Justin Amash and people in the Freedom Caucus did not get on board with this bill. What's it going to take to get enough Republicans together, whether or not you get Democrats? Because Chuck Schumer, by the way, says he'll do anything he can to help the president as long as they do exactly what the Democrats want. That's not going to happen. So what about Justin Amash and the Freedom Caucus and getting these people on board?
We've got what the Democrats wanted. That's why we're trying to fix it. Obamacare is what the Democrats want, what they wanted, what they have. I don't know. The Freedom Caucus did some good things, and others that pushed amendments that we couldn't get on in committee. And we made the bill better. But the issue is you have to ultimately get to yes. You have to move this forward. You can't just stop the process. So we've seen guys like Ted Poe last week, a great conservative from Texas, remove himself from the Freedom Caucus because he said, ultimately, I saw that we just kept moving the goalposts. We could never get the yes, and that doesn't happen. I think there are plenty of others now in the Freedom Caucus, over in the Tuesday group, the moderate side, and certainly those of us in the Republican Study Committee, which is the true majority of the House Republican Conference, the conservatives. We're going to get to that point. This is part of the process of the foment that goes on to make the thing the best that we possibly can. But I would encourage your listeners, especially the conservatives, don't give up. Don't
All right, well, let me ask you this before you run.
Some of the voices that are out there that aren't giving you the truth.
Before you run, then, we've only got about 30 seconds here. Give me a timetable, then, when you think something might reemerge in the second half on this battle over health care.
Well, I think we're going to have to get this thing done before May. And so I'd say the month of April. And if people said we rushed it, well, I don't think we did with 6 months of effort before even coming to vote. But we're going to take the time to get the right number of people on board. That's the 216 votes we need at least, and then move it forward. And I think we can get it done before May.
All right. Congressman Tim Walberg, I appreciate you stopping in. I know you're on your way. Run along, young man, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, Congressman Tim Walberg. The hotline will be open here in the next hour. It's 52 after. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.